south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, a couple of really short emails with possibly quite long answers. Let's see, this one's from Scott. He says, Johnny, great memes. Here's something I think you ought to know. I listen to over 30 different podcasts, and yours is still my numero uno. Thanks for that, Scott. And he says, more expat Eddie stories, please. Everybody wants expat Eddie stories. I have quite a few, too. About half of them are X-rated. But we'll get to the other half here and there. I'll drop them in. Then he says, by the way, Johnny, with Bitcoin starting to take off again, I see that Peter Schiff, the analyst, is not down with Bitcoin at all. Any thoughts on that? Then he says, oh, Johnny, if you start another dinosaur rock band there in Latin America, you ought to name it The Sweaty Masses. Yep, I like it, Scott. The Sweaty Masses. Las Masas Sudorosas. Even sounds good in Spanish, huh? But Scott, you know, about Peter Schiff, he's an analyst that's on all kinds of podcasts and mainstream financial shows. You know, the mainstream media loves interviewing people who hate Bitcoin and cryptos. Why not? Who's got the most to lose when cryptos take over? Banks. And where do banks advertise? In the mass media, right? So where's their bias going to lie? About Mr. Schiff. You have to remember, he's one of those dyed-in-the-wool gold bugs. Gold and silver is everything for him. That's how he's made his money. All his life he's had a silver and gold company. And who'd have ever thunk 30 years ago that anything like cryptocurrencies would come to pass? I myself have been a gold and metals bug since I was a teenager. And I've dealt with lots of these outfits that sell gold and silver and other metals, both online and in the old days by snail mail. And back in Chicago, I even had my favorite pawn shops because, you know, people, usually down and out people, drunks, drug addicts, and petty thieves would bring in their recently deceased uncle or grandpa's coin collection and try to hawk it. Yeah, right. Well, that was the usual story back then when you brought something in the pawn. Yep, back then the rule was ask me no questions and I'll tell you no lies. But these days, even pawn shop owners have to ask for multiple IDs and follow the Know Your Customer laws. But, you know, when I was a kid, I used to love checking out those pawn shops. I certainly didn't have much money back then, but I was always there to check out what was coming in. And, you know, little by little, I'd pick up this and that gold or silver piece, and I amassed a pretty good collection. That is, until one of my ex-girlfriends, who shall remain nameless, at least for now, stole the whole damn thing. That was in the early 90s. No, it wasn't a Latina. It was a British girl. And present value of what she stole? Around, get this, $400,000. So much for that retirement fund, huh? So then you might ask, and everyone who knows this story does, they say, Johnny, how pissed were you? Did anybody die or disappear mysteriously? Well, I'm not that kind of guy, and you can't go to jail for what you're thinking, at least not here in Latin America. But I bounced back in a lot of different ways. But still, my friends who know the details of that story know better than to mention her name around me. However, these days, because it's so long ago, more than 20 years now, I rarely think about that incident, except when people are talking about gold and precious metals, like right now. When it does cross my mind, I think of one word. Karma. By the way, it wasn't that I had the stuff hidden around the house or anything and she stole it. I was stupid enough to have a safety deposit box in a well-known bank in the UK. Her and her father were able to get the bank to open it up for them. And how'd that happen? Well, I don't want to talk about it. But I digress, though, not much. Anyway, I used to go to pawn shops a lot. That's how I bought most of my gold and silver back then. Then suddenly, when the internet came, all these big gold and silver dealers were online and you could just order direct and they'd deliver it to your house. Like, for example, J.M. Bullion and Peter Schiff's outfits. They're really reputable for selling gold, silver, platinum, etc. And, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, cryptocurrencies did exist, but not too many people knew about them. When people started sending emails to the metals dealers saying, hey, have you heard about this Bitcoin stuff and the other cryptocurrencies? A lot of them, almost all of them, at the time said it was a great idea, but a fad. Probably will fade away. Why? Because they were totally vested in making all their money off physical gold and silver sales, paid for in almost all cases with U.S. dollars. Then the craziest thing happened. About 2 years ago, they all started accepting Bitcoin, Litecoin, and other coins as payment for gold and silver, platinum, etc. And then, and this is relevant, about a year and a half ago, very few gold and silver companies wouldn't take Bitcoin and altcoins. And one of the biggest holdouts was, guess who? Peter Schiff's gold company, Schiff Gold. In fact, you could look up YouTubes and podcasts showing Peter Schiff dissing the hell out of cryptocurrencies, saying cryptos were just sort of a virtual construct in a Ponzi scheme. However, now he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. The last holdout, Peter Schiff, Schiff Gold, is now taking Bitcoin as payment for precious metals. Isn't that funny? So even though he hates cryptos, he became one of the last metals dealers to cave. Now they're all in. By the way, that's a great way to diversify your money. You know, you hold some cryptocurrency, you shouldn't have all your eggs in one basket, and you buy some gold or silver online with one of those big reputable companies, and they'll ship it right to your house. And of course, if you buy it with crypto, you can be almost totally anonymous if you do it right. And isn't that one of the top selling points for crypto? That you can do your transactions nearly anonymously? Actually, there are ways to do it totally anonymously, too. I'll be talking about that on a future show, so stay tuned for that. Though I will tell you a common method. You know somebody with Bitcoin? You give them the cash, they transfer the Bitcoin right to your Bitcoin wallet, your Trezor, your Nano, whatever, right in front of you. That's anonymous. No names, no addresses, no background checks, but you got to have trust in the other guy, and you got to be right there when he shifts his Bitcoin or whatever to your wallet. The trick is to find someone on the other half of that buy and sell deal that's completely trustworthy. Sure, you can find people willing to buy and sell for cash online, and then generally you'd meet up with them in a public place like Starbucks and make the transfer. But to the average person, that sounds so dodgy. You know, let's meet somewhere. I'll bring cash and you bring your Bitcoin, whatever. There are other ways, of course, but that way I'd never recommend myself unless you really know the person. But that is one way you could stay completely anonymous in cryptocurrency if you're up in the States or Canada. Even with those Bitcoin and crypto ATM machines you see popping up everywhere, you can only buy crypto. You can't sell it. And with that, you have to give up all your debts, and they'll take a photo of your passport or driver's license, and, well, you're stuck. You're not anonymous anymore. Because, you know, Big Brother is always watching, and they want to know everything you're doing, especially when it comes to cryptos, because they just can't seem to get their dirty little hands and minds around it to control it. They know it's a big threat to their system, so they either want to kill it or tax it. However, if you're in another country, especially a Latin American third world country, you're out of the reach of Big Brother if you do the right things and don't give up your debts. There are plenty of crypto people and exchanges down here who will work either end of the buy-sell deal. But again, the problem is trust. How do you trust somebody who says, hey, I know you just met me, but give me $2,000 and I'll give you $2,000 worth of Litecoin. Yeah, that's a testy proposition. Well, guess what? As a pleasant but unexpected side effect of running a couple of expat insider seminars every year since 2008, I'd say about a quarter of the people who come to the seminar are really into cryptos, some of them even on the cutting edge. And since a good percentage of the attendees get their plan B moving fast and they end up living in Latin America, some of them who are really into crypto decided to make a business out of buying and selling to fill that void. So, as an extra added attraction, if you come down to my Expat Insider Seminar, you'll meet these guys personally. Because these are people I know, people who've attended my seminars and have been down, some of them as repeat offenders too, we've got that trust factor down 100%. So, for all you guys and gals who send me emails saying, hey, I'd like to get into the crypto thing once I move down to Latin America or whatever, I like to say simply, man, we've got that covered. Not me specifically. Talking about the collective we here. And don't forget, during the lecture part of my Expat Insider Seminar, you'll meet two crypto experts that were in on the game even before I knew about it. One of them, Bitcoin Dan, an internationally known crypto expert who taught the very first university course on Bitcoin, crypto, and the blockchain in the world. Our other crypto expert, Oscar Miner, we call him, there's a guy who knows everything and anything about crypto mining. In fact, he's always got a number of machines running down here, mining away 24/7 as we speak. So if you come down to the seminar, you will meet those two guys personally. You'll hear their presentations, and of course, you'll meet some other crypto gurus in their own right who wish to remain on the sidelines for various reasons. Nothing illegal anyway, not in this jurisdiction, because you see, here in Latin America, the crypto game is wide open. There's nothing illegal about it in any step of the buying or selling process. That as opposed to the hoops you have to jump through when you're dealing with cryptos in the US, Canada, and Europe, and Venezuela. That should say it all, huh? So there's another big reason to get your Plan B in high gear. Best way to do that is to come down to my Expat Insider Seminar. Starts in July. It lasts for a week, and we'll be hitting two different countries, El Salvador and Guatemala. Get in on the early bird discount plans now by going to www.thenewexpat.com and clicking on Johnny's seminar link. Once there, you'll also see the explanation on how to kill two birds with one stone. That is, when you come to the seminar, apply for temporary or permanent residency in Guatemala at the very same time. Lately, about half the people who've been coming down to the seminars have been doing that. And since generally you'll have to spend another week down here after the seminar, just hanging around waiting to sign paperwork, get your photo taken, going down to certain government offices with the lawyer and such. Oh, and that includes our seminar lawyer holding your hand and walking you into a bank so you can get an account. Anyway, if you're applying for residency, you'll be down for a week, and there'll be lots of time for you to take that famous John Galt post-seminar tour. As it turns out, about half the people who come to the seminar take the John Galt trip right after the seminar, too. You can find all that out by clicking on the seminar link at thenewexpat.com website. Enough said about that. Oh, and one last thing about Peter Schiff. He seems to be one of the most outspoken gold and silver guys against cryptocurrency. But you have to ask yourself, if you see him on Fox, CNN, Joe Rogan, or any place, and he's dissing Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, why is it that none of the interviewers have ever posed a question to him? Peter, how come you accept all kinds of cryptocurrencies as payment, yet you're saying you absolutely don't believe in this stuff? That's convenient, huh, Peter? As for me, I just think he's a resentful, big-headed SOB who failed to get into the crypto market early like a lot of his buddies did. And it's purely a case of sour grapes. Like Expat Eddie said, Peter Schiff's like a guy with a gigantic cassette tape music collection. And suddenly the CD disc revolution comes along. That was, what, in the 80s? And he tells the world that's just garbage. Ones and zeros on a little silver disc will never compete with, much less replace, the good old cassette player. Well, we know how that ended up, right? And now even the CD music disc is gone. We've got the thumb drives and streaming. I know, you get it. Meanwhile, nearly all the other physical gold, silver, platinum, palladium traders out there have adopted cryptocurrencies as part of their payment system. They're even advocating stocking up on precious metals and crypto. You'd think they'd be the strongest holdouts. But you see, the fact is, cryptos have taken a big bite out of their business, especially millennials. Wait a minute, did I say millennials? I like it. I'm talking about those millennials that are kind of preppers and believe in a coming crash, and they should. Funny enough, as it turns out, instead of putting some of the excess cash they have into gold and silver, they're putting most of it into cryptos. Why? Because they're the internet and smartphone generation. And those gold bugs, they mostly consist of baby boomers and some Generation Xers. Early on, the smart metals traders said, I'm not going to fight this. I'm going to get a piece of it. You know, it is a very good idea to have physical gold and silver. Of course, silver is really heavy and not easy to move around. Gold's a lot more portable, but it's a pain and scary, especially these days, to get it through borders. And that's a problem cryptocurrencies solved from day one. But you knew that already, right? All right, now we have this short email from Mr. Lewis. It doesn't really need an answer. It says it all. It says, Johnny, thanks for sharing all that great info. Love your show. Been listening since the beginning. Have heard every single show. I myself have been out of the U.S. for 12 years now, having traveled extensively through Southeast Asia and Latin America. I call Medellin, Colombia, my home, and have been living there for at least the past 9 years. Unfortunately, though, it's time to pack my bags and leave. As all the gringos have been piling in, they're all coming here. I don't think this place will turn into the new Costa Rica, I hope. But if it does, such is life. Was a good run, but it ain't no more. By the way, if I find my new Latin paradise, this time I'm not telling anyone where it is. Then he says, by the way, Johnny, what cities and countries you finding yourself in lately? Well, Mr. Louis, in the last 6 months, I've found myself in Lima, Peru, Panama, Cartagena, Colombia, Guatemala, of course, San Salvador, San Juan, Puerto Rico. Don't recommend that place since the hurricane has done its damage. It's only about half repaired, and that's what, a year and a half ago now? Oh, and I hit the DR and Bogota. Couple of recommendations on those places. I'd say skip Puerto Rico and Lima, Peru. All right, Mr. Louis, as far as what you're saying about the gringos piling into Colombia, all I can say is Oops, there goes the neighborhood. Thank you, International Living. I'll tell you, when International Living, escapeartists.com, the AARP, and Condé Nast Traveler put out their annual list of the 10 best retirement havens for gringos and expats, that's the kiss of death for living a first-world life at third-world prices. But it is true if you're one of the first ones in, an early bird. When International Living first starts touting a place, when you land there, you will find paradise on a small pension or Social Security check. But 5 years later, as more and more gringos and expats pile in, you'll wish you had a business down there because that Social Security check just won't cut it anymore. Luckily, though, wherever you land in Latin America, you find you have a lot of time on your hands, and most gringos do find a niche and they make money, if only to just keep busy and active. The point is you don't want to have to face that 5 years after you've found your paradise. So my advice to all you expat gonna-bes and wannabes who are on a strict budget, thinking about just living on Social Security or disability, when you see an International Living, Escape Artist, AARP, or Condé Nast Traveler top 10 list, don't bite. Oh, and Mr. Louis, you say in your email, if you find your new Latin paradise, you're not telling anyone about it. Well, good move, but you know, you can tell me because my listeners are very smart and exclusive. And it's easy to keep it that way. I just stay off of social media. I've got no Facebook, Twaddle, or Instasham account. Yeah, I know for sure I could reach a much wider audience. I can't tell you how many people have advised me to do that all along. But I've resisted and managed to keep my dignity intact. Well, maybe I wouldn't go that far. Anyway, because then if I had a huge audience and I recommended a place, that would be the kiss of death too, wouldn't it? So in that respect, it's better to keep the audience small and exclusive. And though the stats show I've got some millions of downloads for my show and such, that's over a long period of time and nothing like the big boys, like International Living, who are basically shilling land, real estate, and their own pet projects. They get those giant numbers every week. And they need those big numbers. They've got a lot of mouths to feed. Last I heard, they've got 100 people in that organization. You got to shill a lot of real estates and sell a lot of special reports to feed that crowd. And me, Johnny, here at the Expat Files, well, it's just me and my expat insider crew. Those are the only mouths I have to feed. And they all have side jobs, too. Nope, I've got no land, apartment houses, condos, or beachfront property to sell. Don't even have a marketing division or a marketing person. And guess what? I like it that way. And now, a blast from the past, written by an expat insider attendee, came down around 2 years ago now, living and planning up in the northern climes of the eastern U.S. Now, with this email, you'll see it's more urgent than ever to get your own plan B going as fast as you can. I'll paraphrase this a little bit and add my 2 cents because it's my show. Anyway, he says, Johnny, for various reasons, including but not limited to anchoring my own sanity, I've given this matter a great deal of thought. That there's no turning back, the U.S. cannot be fixed. It's time to get the hell out. Then he says, Johnny, feel relieved that I'm only giving you the short version here. Oh, this is from seminar attendee Mr. Bob. Let me just preface this by saying the story that I'm about to relate to you, written by Bob, is a scenario that doesn't exist anymore in the United States, except perhaps in the far-reaching, very small-town boonies of Montana or Idaho. However, it's still a very active and viable way of life here in Latin America. What he's talking about is something that exists in every little, small, and medium town here in Latin America, so let's get on with it. He says, anthropologically speaking, Johnny, humans are pack animals, not like burros, more like wolves. We are at our best when surrounded by somewhat related groups of others. The pack, the extended family, the village. Basically, we all love to have a support system around us. Very few of us can exist as loners. That's a sad and trivial life. We all, at some time or another, think of our childhood and upbringing. And when you had a really great childhood, and some of us did, it's sad to think back on things that can never happen again in today's society. He says, my paternal grandfather was from and owned a house in New Jersey. I was born in 1950 and old enough to remember what conditions were like back then in the 50s. With the exception of two of my father's sisters, they lived elsewhere in the city. We all lived on the same block. All right, just to comment me, Johnny, here. That's the way half of Latin American cities and towns are set up. Families and extended families live really close, sometimes on the same block, sometimes in the same house. Then he says, my parents' brother and self lived upstairs from my grandparents and my father's two brothers. Aunts, uncles, cousins, great aunts, uncles, second cousins, removed cousins, other vaguely related cousins, old family friends, longtime tradesmen, you name it. They were all within a stone's throw of each other. I even remember the milkman, Mr. Beezy. They had milkmen back then. It's true. Gave my father his first job delivering milk before school in the late 30s. Johnny, maybe it's my imagination or I'm mentally polishing a long-lost nostalgic turd. But I do remember when I was on the street back then, one could always feel friendly eyes on oneself. Yep, back then, no one ever got shipped off to a nursing home. There was always some relief available for the primary caregiver. Not at all like the burnout my mother, brother, and myself went through in that order, caring for my father from his stroke in 89. Then, to my own eventual breakdown in 04 from the stress. Then finally he went into the nursing home. Yeah, they got real family values there. You can tell that real fast as you walk through the front door and take a whiff and try not to gag. Oh, but didn't you hear we've got the best healthcare system in the world? Yeah, right. All self-serving bullshit falling from the lips of our politicians. So you might wonder, how did this devolution of family values start? Maybe this will answer the question. We first moved to the suburbs in 1957. We were the third family to move into a brand new development. I remember there was no one there. For me, it was like moving from the womb into a desert, a social desert. There was only one kid, Rusty, my age, in that whole development. Problem was, he had MS. Nice guy, not much of a playmate. Especially since at that time he was getting around in a little pedal-powered tractor. Definitely none of the usual boy roughhousing with him. Not because he was a wimp, because he had tremendous upper body strength and he didn't want to get in his way when he got pissed. Needless to say, I suffered for living in the burbs. I missed my big, fat, extended family terribly. As for my grandparents who died in the mid-50s, they met in the boonies up in the Catskills and built a house. Meanwhile, my gramps was a policeman in Jersey City, and he'd travel up to the house in the Catskill on weekends, living in the city during the week. And when they died, they left the two houses to their kids, all seven of them. They sold the city house to one of my aunts, and then came the best collective decision they ever made. Maybe it was dumb luck. They kept the house as kind of a vacation house up here in the Catskills, what they call the Hollow. It was pure blue-collar vacation heaven, and it was cheap. Once the New York freeway went through, it was only a two-hour drive from Jersey. I remember everyone got 2 weeks vacation during the summer, and the whole bunch got together. And during three-day summer holiday weekends, too. Man, it was a mob scene. And you know, there are good mob scenes and bad mob scenes. This was a good one. Man, did we love it up there. Eventually, I had 19 first cousins. We all had the woods to run around and be, well, destructive. That is, blow off steam and energy outdoors. Things that boys like to do, are prone to do, and just can't do much of anymore. I imagine these days parents would go to jail if their kids were found splashing around in a creek at the foot of a lake, sleeping bags on the porch, tents staked out in the woods or on somebody's lawn, kids climbing trees, falling, coming home with bruises and soakers from falling in the creek. Yep, Child Protective Services would certainly get in on that act. Oh, and did I mention there was always a project going on up at that house in the Hollows? Little doubt us kids learned some very valuable skills that are totally lost these days. Installing septic tanks, toilets, plumbing, electrical, little woodwork, roofing, concrete work. Something's always going wrong at an old house like that. To us kids, it was always a fun do-it-yourself learning project. Oh, and we did have a two-seater outhouse. Oh, God, where's Child Protective Services when you need them? Though once we installed that septic tank, we had an alternative. Didn't matter, whatever little construction or repair detail, us kids were in on it. In fact, we were encouraged to help and our bumbling was well tolerated. And after work came the reward, always a kick-ass barbecue, lawn games, shooting BB and pellet guns off the porch, treasure hunts, no iPhones or Xboxes at all. What a stunted childhood we had. And at night, yeah, we actually went out at night. We'd catch fireflies, sometimes have a big sing-along on the porch, penny ante poker, beer, cigarettes, lots and lots of laughter. A little radio, maybe, but no TV. Yes, up in the Hollows, we learned our vices, like gambling. And you know what that meant? After a whole night of indulging and losing, you could be down $5. Interestingly, though, none of us ever developed an adult gambling problem. One thing I noticed, though, although the extended family was disappearing from the city, up in the boonies, you always had those friendly eyes on you and could knock on any door if you had a problem. Yep, in those little towns and villages, there was lag time in the disappearance of the extended family, too. And the girls around my age, yeah, they gave as good as they got, too. My best friend was Marcia. She taught me how to hunt and bar hop. Taught me how to drive her stick shift Jeep when I was 11. The girls up there in the hollow knew how to harvest apples, make cider, and turn the cider into hard liquor and applejack, too. And they had driveway chickens. Way too many cats, too. Then again, that's what BB guns are for. Now, Johnny, I'm trying to make a point here. And that is, an extended family is vital to one's security, sense of well-being, and happiness. That concept does not exist anymore in the U.S. of A. People in the States these days have not been brought up with those relationships and do not realize what they are missing. It's still obvious to see in Guatemala, though. You see it everywhere. You see that closely knit support system. And if times get tough, you can always run up to Uncle Juan's farm out in the sticks and at least eat good food. No one starves or freezes to death either. I'll tell you, the soil up here in the hollow is not nearly as good as down yonder in Central America, but my ancestors had managed to eke out a living since the 1840s up here. And Johnny, another point that I'm pondering that has led me to theorize how it all slowly came tumbling down. The construction of the interstate highway system in the U.S. and the ease of movement that led to the burbs, the subdivisions, etc., etc., has had a lot to do with the disintegration of the extended family clan system in the USA. The glue that held family and societies together is gone. With those great new roads and the Eisenhower highway system, people could easily and cheaply go where opportunity beckoned or the job demanded. People were moving all the time. However, there's nothing like that I can see in Guatemala. That's yet another reason why people down yonder in Central America can make do with many fewer things and still be much happier than people up here. And now, Johnny, I'd like to conclude my little epic email with some self-serving, sentimental, maudlin whining, if you will. As for me, long before I moved to the hollow up here in Grandma and Grandpa's place, I realized I could not realistically recreate my old life up here. Not by myself. Impossible. So I'm now the only one of us left in this hollow. It's a sad thing, but I do garner a lot of warmth and comfort by being reminded of what I and we once had. It's still a lovely place to be, but difficult to be alone here. It's all about love. All you need is love, to quote John Lennon and a million others. So, Johnny, saludos. Previous seminar attendee, Bob. Well, Bob, what can I say but to misquote the famous words of Horace Greeley when he said, "Go west, young man." Could have sworn he was pointing south.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!